Support for WPR comes from the state of Wisconsin, the federal government, business sponsors, and more than 50,000 members who contribute. Thank you to everyone who makes Wisconsin Public Radio available around the state and at WPR.org.
It can be dangerous to predict how future historians might write the political history of Wisconsin, but it seems like they might have a lot to say about the year 2011.
Because in terms of state politics, 2011 was the year that changed everything.
Wisconsin had this reputation as a progressive beacon that went way back, more than a century. From labor protections, to breaking up monopolies, to the nation's first state income tax, this was part of our legacy.
And then 2011 happened.
If you lived in Wisconsin in 2011, and even if you didn't, you might remember it was kind of chaotic.
Scott Walker, a conservative Republican from Milwaukee County, has just been elected governor. And about a month after he takes office, he introduces a plan that would decimate the state's public employee unions.
Suddenly, people who normally don't care much about state government do. Tens of thousands of people show up in downtown Madison for weeks. Every day you hear crowds chanting.
People literally take over the Capitol. Some of them actually live there for a while. They're shouting and drumming off and on all day, and then at night, they line the building's marble floors with their sleeping bags. Then they start all over again in the morning.
One day in March, 100,000 people show up at the Capitol for a rally. They spill out onto the sidewalk and the street and into downtown. It's so crowded that it's hard to move.
The same week as that giant historic rally, the same week Walker signs the law that changes unions forever, another event goes largely unnoticed. The U.S. Census Bureau releases its redistricting data.
Republican staffers and consultants begin work at a private law firm right across the street from the Capitol. They call their office the Map Room. And at this moment in history, during this chaos, work on redistricting, one of the most consequential bills of the decade, quietly begins.
From WPR Reports, I'm Bridget Bowden.
And I'm Sean Johnson. This is Mapped Out. Now, we just said redistricting began quietly, but it's not like it snuck up on people. It happens every 10 years on a schedule. Remember episode one? The census happens every decade and then redistricting. This was not a surprise.
In fact, just a year before, in the 2010 campaign for governor, one of the candidates actually made it part of his platform.
Well, good morning. I'm very, very pleased this morning to have just submitted my papers to become a candidate for governor here in the state of Wisconsin.
Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, the Democrat running that year, held a press conference outside the state's elections agency on the day he turned in his nomination papers. He was talking about redistricting. He wanted to change the way the state drew its maps.
Barrett's plan would have given the state's elections board more power over the process. He also wanted a new requirement in state law. Redistricting plans must be competitive.
That it certainly is worth exploring a very serious alternative to do this in a way that makes it less partisan, less litigation-driven, in the hopes that we can get a truly representative democracy here in the state of Wisconsin. Thank you very much. Thank you.
This might be a good time to remind you about what government looks like in 2010. It's easy to forget, but at the time, Democrats are running everything.
And we mean everything. The White House, the U.S. House and Senate, the Wisconsin Governor's Office, and the full Wisconsin Legislature. But those Democrats haven't really made redistricting a priority. Tom Barrett is one of the only people talking about this. And later, even Barrett basically abandons the issue, because this is 2010.
This is 2 years after President Obama was elected, just a few months after he signed the Affordable Care Act. The Great Recession is still fresh on people's minds, and so is Obama's federal stimulus package.
So campaigns around the country really focus on a couple themes: cutting government and creating jobs. Barrett buys into this. His first ad is about jobs.
We all know government doesn't create jobs, businesses do. But working together, we can help pave the way.
He talks about cutting state government by putting Madison on a diet.
Go to my website and see my plans for cutting government down to size.
Tom, how about some pie?
Sounds great, but I'm cutting back.
Tom Barrett for governor. Straight talk and honest plans for Wisconsin.
The thing is, these are the same issues Republicans run on all the time. Talking about cutting government is kind of their thing.
The candidate they picked to run against Tom Barrett is Scott Walker. And he's also talking about jobs.
I believe that the people of Wisconsin, not the government, the people of Wisconsin can create 250,000 new jobs by the end of my first term.
He's talking about cutting government.
Wouldn't it be great if the government actually saved money like all the rest of us do? If you've had it with big government like I have, join us at brownbagmovement.com. Let's change it together.
And his signature issue is canceling a planned high-speed rail line between Milwaukee and Madison. But that's a story for another podcast.
There's a backlash against Democrats, and the Republican base is fired up. GOP strategists are looking for ways to seize power.
One of them is Republican Chris Jankowski. In 2010, he's running a national group that's focused on state races. He knows the power that state legislatures hold, and he pitches that to donors.
They would just give me 10% of what they were spending federally. I swear I could, have an impact.
Now, Jankowski's group always focuses on state races. It's kind of their niche. But he knows they matter most of all this year, a year ending in zero, because whoever wins will be in charge of redistricting.
He creates a program called REDMAP, the Redistricting Majority Project. The goal? Flip state legislatures to give Republicans the power to draw maps.
Jankowski's group funnels this national money to local districts where the number suggests Republicans could win.
We used data and objective research. We didn't have to actually meet the candidates to know what we could do.
Now, his group is hardly the only one spending money in 2010. Republicans and Democrats and their political allies around the nation throw billions of dollars around.
But Jankowski's group is methodical, targeted.
They get involved in races where people don't necessarily expect it. And they do this in districts all over the country, including districts in Wisconsin.
Leading up to Election Day, pretty much everyone expects Republicans to do well. This is historically how it goes in midterms. When one party controls everything, the pendulum tends to swing back the other way.
But on election night, when results start rolling in, they're dramatic.
The Republicans ride a wave of voter anger to take back control of the House. What's flashing red are the seats that used to belong to the Democrats.
Look at the swath of red, a sweep, just a bloodbath for the Democrats in Pennsylvania. You cannot underestimate how much change in America is now colored red. It was blue in 2006. It was blue in 2008. It is red now. It is Republican. And Democrats looking ahead to 2012, beginning with the president.
Plenty of states get swept up in this wave, but nowhere does it hit harder than in Wisconsin. In the governor's race, Walker handily beats Barrett.
In the race for U.S. Senate, Republican Ron Johnson beats progressive icon Russ Feingold. Republicans flip Wisconsin's congressional delegation. And in the state legislature, Republicans capture majorities in the Senate and Assembly. The Democratic leaders of the Assembly and Senate, political powerhouses, go down.
This includes Russ Decker, the majority leader of the Wisconsin State Senate. And his race is especially surprising. It's one of those where people didn't even realize he was vulnerable.
But Chris Jankowski did. REDMAP's polling suggested Decker could be beat, so they swooped in and campaigned against him.
Looking back, Jankowski says the red wave would have happened with or without REDMAP. But in races like Decker's, it made a big difference.
It was a great year in 2010. There's no question that Republicans would have been in a good spot in redistricting without REDMAP because of 2010. We didn't know that at the time, but I don't think Wisconsin would have happened.
It's apparent almost immediately that Republicans have won more than just one election on November 2nd of 2010. They've won the biggest political prize of all, the power to draw the maps that will shape elections for the next decade.
how the maps came together after the break.
While you were busy this week with, you know, life, we've been sorting through the ins and outs of Wisconsin state politics for you. So listen to the WPR Politics podcast to catch up on everything you might have missed. Join me, John K. Wilson, along with WPR Capitol reporter Laurel White and Sean Johnson, you know, the guy from this podcast, for new episodes almost every week. Subscribe on your favorite podcast app or at WPR.org/politics.
One of the people watching the election results come in that night in 2010 is Republican strategist Joe Handrick.
Handrick has decades of experience in politics. He ran his first campaign for the state legislature when he was still in college in the 80s. He eventually won seats in the state assembly and Senate, not to mention a stint as chairman of the Northwoods town of Minocqua. And his interest in politics goes way back.
Yeah, it probably happened sophomore year in high school when I became the realization that I was never going to be a starter on the football team, and I was never going to be a starter on the cross-country team. But boy, I was good at figuring out how to get elected to student council.
Eventually, Handrick leaves office to become a Republican political strategist. And when we say strategist, that's probably selling it short. When it comes to elections, Handrick's brain is like a computer. He sees patterns that other people might miss.
And when Republicans win, he knows it's a big deal for his party because he specializes in redistricting. He worked on maps for Republicans in the 1990s and the 2000s. He's so highly regarded by Republicans that they hire him again in 2011.
So I was basically a contract hire.
And when he says contract hire, there are a few layers to that. Handrick was hired by a law firm that was hired by another law firm that was hired by Republican legislative leaders to help with the map drawing.
Handrick and the other map drawers don't work from the state capitol. They set up shop across the street at the private law firm Michael Best and Friedrich. They call their office the map room.
Handrick isn't working alone. There are also some lawyers and legislative aides who work for the two most powerful people in the legislature, Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald and Assembly Speaker Jeff Fitzgerald. And yeah, they're brothers.
They also set the agenda for everything that goes through the legislature, including redistricting.
But they use a tactic here that's not typical for most legislation. They force every rank-and-file Republican lawmaker to sign confidentiality agreements. Some people call them secrecy oaths.
One by one, every GOP senator and representative visits this law firm for their chance to see their district, and their district only. And under the terms of the confidentiality agreements, they have to keep it private. Handrick says he wouldn't have done all that, but it wasn't really his call. He says he had a specific assignment.
So my focus was on having a map created that could pass court muster.
Pass court muster. Yes, even when there's single party control, courts can still be involved in redistricting, but their role is different.
Mostly, courts are looking at whether the map meets the requirements of the Voting Rights Act. That is, a map has to make sure that the voice of minority communities gets heard, that they can vote for the candidates they want.
This is one of Handrick's specialties, making sure a map meets this rule by drawing what are known as majority-minority districts.
My source of selfish pride has always been that this kid from up north has been able to have a real and tangible role in helping improve minority representation in Wisconsin.
Also, remember those traditional redistricting criteria we talked about in the last episode? Districts have to be equal in population, compact, contiguous, and respect local boundary lines. Handrick wants a map that satisfies all those, too.
I've had a real good knack for being able to take the complex competing criteria and make them work together.
To hear Handrick describe this, it's an art. Every mapmaker can prioritize these criteria in different ways.
Handrick puts an emphasis on compactness. He doesn't want to see funny-shaped districts. He says those are how you know a map is gerrymandered.
But here's the thing. Other mapmakers disagree, including one who worked with Handrick on the 2011 map.
His name is Keith Gaddy. He's a professor at the University of Oklahoma, and he's written a bunch of books about politics. He even wrote a chapter about Handrick in one of them.
In 2011, Keith Gaddy is such an expert in redistricting that he gets hired in states all over the country to help draw maps. This is his second time working on redistricting in Wisconsin.
At a forum in 2020, Gaddy said there's nothing inherently good about prioritizing one of these criteria over another. So, for example, Handrick doesn't like funny-shaped districts. But Gaddy said that doesn't matter.
Yeah, and optics matter, but optics can fool you, which is we could draw you a perfectly square district that was a gerrymander. I'm not sure where it would be, but we know we could do this thing. So don't let shape fool you.
And remember what Handrick said about creating minority districts?
Gaddy said that can actually help Republicans. Think of it this way. Black voters, especially in Milwaukee, overwhelmingly vote Democrat. So when they're packed in to a small number of districts, it gives Democrats less power in the legislature.
So in crafting majority-minority districts, you're necessarily going to introduce some skew in the map that will naturally tend towards a Republican advantage.
If it seems like Gaddy has a different view of map making than Handrick, well, it's because he does. Map making is super complicated. There's a lot to argue over. And even map makers who worked on the same project together can have different priorities.
So with something so complex, how does a map maker explain this stuff? Not only to the general public, but to legislators.
Because remember what we learned last episode in Mr. Olson's government class? In Wisconsin, the state constitution says the legislature is responsible for drawing the maps. They get a chance to vote on the plan like any other bill.
On July 11th, 2011, the redistricting bill that mapmakers have been working on behind closed doors for months is introduced.
And by the way, this is the very first time that Democratic lawmakers get to look at this at all. Even though that private law firm has been working for the legislature, Democrats were not allowed to see their own districts or anyone else's.
2 days later, the redistricting bill gets its first and only public hearing.
Joe Handrick doesn't testify at this hearing. Neither does Keith Gaddy.
And the Fitzgerald brothers, the two most powerful people in the legislature, they don't testify either.
My name is Tad Ottman.
They send Tad Ottman and Adam Foltz, their legislative aides who are working across the street in the map room.
Ottman does most of the talking, and he starts right away by saying their map meets the traditional principles of redistricting.
Equal population, sensitivity to minority concerns, and compact and contiguous districts.
When Foltz testifies, it's all about numbers. He rattles them off without stopping.
Same applies to Assembly District 29, also overpopulated by somewhere around 9,000 people. It shrunk to shed its overpopulation, and 28 was the least growing of the three, only 2,000 overpopulated.
Shrunk a it's bit a lot of information to take in.
Some of what Ottman and Foltz say that day contradicts itself.
For example, they say they decided to put the cities of Kenosha and Racine together in one Senate district.
So it unites two urban, large urban areas that...
That decision, Ottman says, let them keep rural areas separate.
But in Sheboygan, they kind of did the opposite. They could have put the entire city in a single assembly district surrounded by a rural area. Instead, they chopped it in two.
Either choice is legally valid. It's a matter of making a choice on the map.
You get a sense at this hearing that the lawmakers listening, even the Republican chairing the committee, are a little overwhelmed.
All right, well, thank you for your thorough comments this morning. I kind of feel like I'm back in Statistics 101 here, and appreciate your work on this.
When lawmakers start to ask questions, they typically want to know about their districts. They know these places. Why did you move a line here or there? What was your reasoning?
Ottman fields most of the questions, and his answers are the same. The map meets the traditional redistricting criteria. Therefore, it's legal. He comes back to this over and over.
As I kind of started out my presentation, there's three core principles that go into any reapportionment plan, and that's equal population, compact mm-hmm. and contiguous, and sensitivity.
But as I mentioned,
there are different legal principles, and making a choice on those principles may lead you to compromise the other principle or to weigh the other principle.
I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, but it kind of comes back to the same point. It's there are reapportionment principles that are applied to any map drawing, and you have to make choices between them.
For most of the hearing, the room is quiet. And this is pretty unusual for this period in Wisconsin history. Remember, this hearing is happening in between the passage of Scott Walker's big union law and the recall elections to come. People are mad. Hearings are often interrupted by shouting.
But there is one politely confrontational moment. Senator John Erpenbach, a Democrat from Dane County, wants to know whether they looked at any other criteria when they drew this map, like whether the map is good for Republicans.
And I'm sorry, what was your first question?
First question is, did you look at the partisan makeup of the districts?
That information was made available to all four caucuses by the GOP.
But you guys had the legal representation. We didn't.
Erpenbach asks some form of this question again and again. And every time, Ottman dodges. After a long back and forth, Erpenbach gives it one more shot.
Did the partisan makeup of the districts come into play at all when drawing the maps?
And again, Ottman comes back to the traditional redistricting criteria.
The principles were the ones I enumerated. Those were the ones that drove drawing the map.
So the answer is no?
The answer is that we follow those three legal principles by which the map...
2 days later, this committee run by Republicans passes the map. It passes the state assembly and Senate just days after that.
There are 19 ayes, 14 noes. Senate Bill 148 is passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
This is not like the other big stuff happening in 2011. There's no chanting, no outrage, and in just a few weeks, Walker signs it.
But it wouldn't be until the next election, in November of 2012, that Wisconsin would see the power of this map.
That's next week on Mapped Out.
Mapped Out is reported by Bridget Bowden.
And Sean Johnson. We're produced by Brad Kohlberg, edited by Noah Ovshinsky. Music by Carl Christensen. Additional support from Adam Friedrich.
Digital editing by John K. Wilson. And digital direction by David Hyland.
Photography by Angela Major. Artwork by John Nichols. Audio of Chris Jankowski, provided by NPR's Planet Money.
You can see more at wpr.org/mappedout.